Let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith. During persecution, some believers are spared. Others go through torture and death. Some wonder why God doesn't deliver all of his people, since he surely could. Today, an answer to a vexing problem we all face as we try to understand God. From the Moody Church in Chicago, this is Running to Win with Dr. Erwin Lutzer, whose clear teaching helps us make it across the finish line. Today, we continue a series on the Church in Babylon, unleashing the power of a Spirit-filled witness. We're in Daniel 3, seeing what happens when the state becomes God.
But you know, there is a limitation also that God imposes upon himself when it comes to his power. Why doesn't he deliver everyone? Well, I'll tell you why he doesn't deliver everyone, and that's because of his ultimate hidden purpose that is hidden from us, but fully known to him. Great case study in this is Jesus himself. You know, here's Jesus, and was God able to deliver Jesus? Oh my, was God able to deliver Jesus? Of course. Jesus said there in the garden, could not I call 12 legions of angels and they'd come and deliver me? Clearly Jesus could be delivered even without the angels. But I can imagine that all of them were just looking down and they were hovering over Jesus and they were just saying, give us the signal so that we can deliver him. But they were prevented from it. I think of the words of Jesus to Pilate that I've often pondered when he said to Pilate, and Pilate saying, you know, don't you know that I have power to crucify you and all those other things? Jesus said there would be no power at all that has been given to you except that which was given to you from above. Pilate, the very breath that you breathe and the words that you speak out of your mouth, all of that is totally dependent upon God's grace and mercy. You have no power at all against me except what God gives you. You see, my friend, God's purposes determine the fact that he does not always exercise his power. It's often held in abeyance. Could God deliver them? Well, you heard these three men say, our God is able to deliver us. Absolutely. But if he doesn't, we'll still be faithful unto death. You know, what was God's purpose here? Well, part of the purpose is for Nebuchadnezzar. Did you know that Nebuchadnezzar is going to be in heaven? Isn't that something we're going to say? Hey, Nebuchadnezzar, just know that you gave me lots of sermon material. And I used you as a bad example, but I'm sure glad you made it. Because in subsequent chapters, though he doesn't become a believer here, though he makes a decree that everybody's supposed to be honoring the God of the three guys, in subsequent chapters, God humbles him and he makes a proclamation about the God of Israel that just takes your breath away. I believe that that indicates he became a true believer in Israel's God. So that was part of it. The other part that some people think is God used this one experience as an illustration of how he walks with his people and is able to walk with his people through the fire of affliction, such as the Jews will experience during the tribulation, that God walks with them. The fourth man, of course, is Jesus. No question about that. The angel of the Lord. And so, as this story unfolds, God is showing that at any time he wants to deliver his people through the fire, he most assuredly has the resources to do so. But we don't know his hidden purposes. Could I make a suggestion to you as a pastor from my heart to yours? Let's agree that we are going to stop trying to read God's purposes through an envelope. You know, you've had that experience. You hold up the envelope to the light and you think to yourself, oh yeah, I notice a few words, but you know, the problem is the light has to come through this way and the letter is rather thick. But then you see along here, oh yeah, you do catch a phrase, but the problem is you have no context, and you don't know what's on this side because this side is all messed up because of the creases of the envelope, but you stand there trying to read it. Long ago, I've stopped predicting what I think God is going to do because he surprised me too many times. And what we need to do is to say our future is in his hands, even when we are wheeled into a hospital for surgery. We do not know the outcome. We do not know. But one thing we know, God is able to deliver. God is able to heal. But if he doesn't, let it be known unto us and to all those who are watching. Always remember, you don't just suffer for yourself. You suffer for all the people who are watching you. Let it be known that we will not swerve in our faith in the living and the true God. Now, how do we nail this down for ourselves living in America as we do at this point in America's history? I want to give you three nails to put in the wall, so to speak, three lessons that I don't want you to forget. The first lesson is this, that persecution should be expected. Persecution should be expected. You see, whenever a state drifts towards paganism, the curtailment of religious freedom usually goes with it as the state assumes more and more power and more laws, and we should expect that. And we should not be overwhelmed by it. What lies in America's future? Well, I don't know, but, you know, this is something to think about. And by the way, if you're here today and you struggle with same-sex attraction, once again, you're welcome here. The welcome mat at Moody Church is for everyone because God's grace is for all of us as sinners, and that's where we all stand. But notice this, an article in the American Journal of Orthopsychiatry. Racism, sexism, and homophobia do not fit into any current diagnostic category. The authors propose that those who engage in such behavior display a form of psychopathology deserving of its own category. So this article seeks to find the common denominator to be intolerance. The authors explore the possibility of an intolerant personality disorder, its symptoms, and possible cures. Intolerant personality disorder. Is it possible that the day may come in the future, hope that it's in the very distant future, where intolerant personality disorder becomes an identifiable mental illness, a pathology? So that if you belong to that and you do not, and you are saying things and expressing your convictions, that the Child Protective Services might be in your home, checking on the children, perhaps taking them from you because you have a pathology called the intolerance personality disorder. You say, well, that's really far-fetched. Yeah, I know it is. But, you know, things like that are happening in Europe already. But you know what we need to do? We need to just take a deep breath. Everybody, if you're listening, take a deep breath now, would you please? I have to do it up here because I'm talking. And some of you have to do it there because you're sitting. Let us remember this. Why is this strange? Peter said these marvelous words, which at one time I knew exactly by memory, but I need to read them now. He's writing to people under the Roman Empire and says, "Beloved, do not be surprised at the fiery trial when it comes upon you to test you as though something strange were happening to you. Don't be surprised. But rejoice insofar as you share Christ's sufferings, that you may also rejoice and be glad when his glory is revealed. If you're insulted for the name of Christ, you are blessed because the Spirit of glory and of God rests on you." We could say the fourth man walks with you during those insults, during the persecution, during the false accusations. God is always with his people, and he will never leave us nor forsake us. So we must welcome it. Fear and anger are not options to the Christian. And we must be able to be like the early church, who considered it a privilege to be identified with Jesus in a culture back then that was anti-Christian and anti the worship of the Roman Empire. So first of all, accept it. Second, and this becomes a little disheartening, most people will bow before the power of the state and its laws. Most people will bow before the power of the state and its laws. I've been meditating on this past week and asking myself a question. Three people refused to bow. We have no idea why Daniel was not there. It's possible he was on a tour somewhere for the king and we know, of course, Daniel would never have bowed, because in chapter 6, he has his own opportunity when he prays to Jerusalem three times a day, and they tell him to stop doing that, and he won't, and he gets thrown into the lion's den. So we know that Daniel would certainly have not bowed, even as these three guys didn't bow. But apart from that, I'm asking myself a question. Weren't there 10,000 Jews, minimally? Scholars believe there are many more than that went to Babylon. Where in the world were they? Well, maybe, they were out on the other side of the plain and nobody saw them. I don't know. I think maybe all the rest decided to bow because they said to themselves, look, this doesn't mean that we can't also worship Jehovah. Furthermore, and this touches my heart, we have children. And you know what we'll do? We'll bow the knee, but we won't bow our hearts. So God knows we really don't mean it. This is Pastor Lutzer. Well, in this message, which is entitled When the State Becomes God, I'm dealing with some very critical issues that relate to even what is happening here in the United States of America. But the question that I want to ask you today is, if you were in a Muslim country such as Iraq, Iran, perhaps even Egypt and others, and you were asked to worship a false god, would you be willing to stand against that cultural pressure even if it meant your life? And by the way, that's not only happening in the Middle East today, it's happening in North Korea. It's happening in other countries of the world. And what we as Christians need to do is to ask ourselves that tough question, is our faith strong enough? The faith that we are communicating to our children, is it such a viable faith with integrity that we are teaching them to stand strong in the midst of pressure, even despite the great sacrifice it might cost them? These are the matters that are on my heart today. And I certainly hope that you listen next time as we continue here on Running to Win with this message titled, When the State Becomes God. No message could be more relevant to what is around us today.
Dr. Erwin Lutzer with more of When the State Becomes God, the ninth message in a series on the Church in Babylon, unleashing the power of a Spirit-filled witness. Next time on Running to Win, facing the consequences of telling the state no. The Church in Babylon is a 10-part series on CD. We'd like to send you that series as our thank you for a gift of any amount to support the ministry of Running to Win. Just call us at 1-800-215-5001. That's 1-800-215-5001. Online, go to offerrtw.com. That's offerrtw.com. Or write to Running to Win, Moody Church, 1635 North LaSalle Boulevard, Chicago, Illinois, 60614. This is Dave McAllister. Running to Win is a ministry of the Moody Church.